श्रील गुरुदेव की जय, श्रीमन महाप्रभु की जय, श्री हरिनाम संकीर्तन की जय, श्री श्री राधा गोपीनाथ जी की जय, श्री श्री कृष्ण बलराम की जय, गौर भक्तवृंद की जय, गौर प्रेमानंद हरि 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 बोल। Pranam to all. Welcome. Good evening. And here we are today. We are sharing these last two meetings. Here we have been discussing Brahma Stuti, some section of it, two verses from the prayers of Sri Brahma. And today we have chosen one last meeting here about basically Stogosti, which refers to questions and answers, very classical way of acquiring knowledge as it has been presented in our tradition. You pay attention to the Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam. Basically, you find questions and answers. Arjuna and Krishna, Parikshit Maharaj, Sukadeva Goswami, in the Bhagavatam, there are so many Istagosti, so many conversations, Vidura, Maitreya, Brahma, Krishna, and so on. Chaitanya Charitamrita, you have Ramananda Sambad. Sambad means conversation, basically. As you may have heard, there are different types of conversation, Bada, Jalpa, and Bitanda. So Jalpa and Bitanda are so-called conversations in which the two parts are not that concerned with truth, but actually are concerned with being right, basically, defeating the other, and this type of ulterior motives. Still, there is not that much of a deep commitment with truth itself. But Bada means a real dialogue, real conversation, which means I have the willingness and disposition to be defeated by truth, and that will be success. That's real conversation. Conversation is, before we open our mouth, I already know what to tell you and what not to accept from you and how I should know. It's however and whatever truth may, however truth wants to manifest, I pray to be willing to be possessed and defeated by that. Defeated, quote unquote. That's why, as I like to say, we always say per day at least 108 times, Kijai. Jai, Jai, Kijai, Jai, Kijai, Kijai, Kijai. That's not just an automatic replay of okay, whenever I say ki, I have to say jai. But actually, it really means all victory for whatever. Srila Gurudev, the Bhai, may all of them triumph on me. That will be my success. Again, even as paradoxical as it may sound, our ultimate success is being defeated by truth. Because still we carry so many misconceptions. No? I mean, we should be humble enough to acknowledge that as sadhakas as we may be and as glorious as is our contact with bhakti, we shouldn't be as bold enough as to think that I have no prejudice, no misconception. So the humility of a Vaishnava that characterizes a Vaishnava for who he, she is I'm always ready for further learning. I'm always ready for discovering a new layer of reality. I don't want, as I like to say, to take Krishna consciousness for granted. I don't want to fall into that mortal mistake, if you will. Like thinking, I already know what's this about. From A to Z, I can tell you all that. I mean, the disposition of a progressive Vaishnava is, I may know something by the grace of Guru and Vaishnavas, but I mean, it's much more what we don't know than what we know. No. Of course, I'm not speaking here about just knowing things. Real knowing is in the heart, but how much do we know from the heart either? No? So we have to remain. And the more you know from your heart, the more you realize, I mean, there's no limit to how much can be further discovered. That's a real symptom of someone who is getting closer to the infinite, as Srila Siddhar Maharaj will say. You get closer to the infinite, you will realize there is no limit for progress. So you can imagine, someone who is really having an experience of that will never say, I'm almost having the whole infinite in my fist or something like that. He will realize, I'm just touching one point in one infinite line. And that's overwhelming. That single point is... But I will never think this is all. This is it. No, there's no limit. As we were sharing yesterday, how this eternal play, Lila of Sri Krishna in Vrindavan, is unfolding constantly with nuances and new things and new games and new experiences. And that's the very definition of the word anurag, which is one of the developments of divine love. And we have to understand what's divine love and the implications of divine love for the further developments. And anurag means by having that type of love, at every moment the experience is newer and newer. So you will never say, I already did this thing. I already felt this stuff. Krishna, we already played that game. Oh, today again doing the same thing? That's too boring. It's never the same. But you have to be willing for entering into a dynamic that it's never the same. So it's tagosti, going back to my point, means this type of conversation, this type of dialogue with the two sides, not only me, you are doing minimum 50% of the equation is your contribution, minimum, hopefully more. I don't think I may be able to have 50% to contribute, so please invest more. And that will create these dynamics of continuous chamatkar, or of continuous experience of astonishment. Oh. I heard, like Mahaprabhu here in the Bhagavatam, oh, I heard Prahlad Charit, but now I'm hearing it for a second time. Oh. It is like I've never heard that before. It's the first time I'm hearing Prahlad Charit. And then third time. Oh. First. And like this, Mahaprabhu will hear the same quote-unquote section 100 times. And he was not bored. And Gadadhar Pandit, who was giving the lecture, was not bored either. It's not that he was saying to Mahaprabhu, you are requesting to speak again the same thing for 100th time. I'm bored to death. Let's jump to the 10th canto or whatever. None of the two were complaining. Now the speaker and the hearer were like, let's go again to the same section. Let's go again to the same. Because why? Because it's never the same, actually. It's never the same. So that's the nature of the Bhagavatam. That's the nature of Sri Harinam. That's the nature of every single aspect in Krishna consciousness. But of course, we have to be aligned to that reality. And so Ishtagosti tries to create, in the words of my Guru Maharaj, that type of teachable moment where all of us try to enter into the area of epiphany, where we are trying to have this type of glimpses of, oh, no, there is no end to this discussion, basically. Kirtaniya Sadahari, there is place for eternal Harikata, eternal kirtan. There is a corresponding place where these things are going on eternally without interruption. Haituki apratihata. There's no interruption to that flow. I mean, here we are having glimpses of that, but still some interruptions are there. Not that anyone to blame outside of us, but just we ourselves sometimes become our worst enemies. So, but in that level, no, but there are no enemies in any sense of the term. So gradually trying to get closer there, so that's we are praying for some little glimpse, some little epiphany that may nourish our hope and faith in that direction. So I don't know if there are any questions, any topics, any things. Well, there are one question that was waiting from the other day, if that still remains.
That still remains.
So we may start with that one.
You said at the end, you said, well, if you can remember that. I just remembered that Bhakti Rasa had said something about the journey of Uddhava when he went from, you know, where he was in Dwarka, and Krishna sent him to Vrindavan and he transformed him, you know. And then I said, well, you know, we're starting from minus zero, and now where, how do we find our, where do we find ourselves in our own journey? I think that was the question. Maybe somebody here remembers it better than I do. question.
Yeah, that's the gist of the question.
Yeah. And, yeah, I mean, it's, there is so much to learn. Like, in Bhagavatam class this morning, the topic was Brahmaji and how he read the Vedas three times so that he could make sure that he got it, you know, it's like all of us, I mean, we have some very high IQ people and just some people that are just like, you know, we can read, you know. So we all have our, I guess, our particular relationship with Krishna and the whole philosophy. So, how do I find my place in it?
Mm-hmm.
Would be my basic, deepest question, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I've been chanting Hare Krishna since 1970, you know, and I'm still feeling like, haven't passed go yet.
Mm-hmm.
It seemed like he was wondering to how we, thus that river got transformed, and what he heard, how we at our stage getting transformed. Are we having a transformation like Uddhava had? Maybe not that level.
Yeah.
Go along.
Or how can we have a transformation? You know, what is our opportunity for transformation?
Mm. Well, yeah. Thank you for the question. Yeah, I mean, the very identity of who we are, we are tatastha jiva. Basically, the very definition of tatastha means opportunity for transformation, in the sense of tatastha means that according to the particular environment you are associating with, you will be influenced by that.
Mm-hmm.
So that speaks about the potential for transformation if we expose ourselves to certain specific influences, in this case, bhakti, devotional influences, that will create an epiphany. I mean, I'm sure on some level or another, all of us have gone through something of that. If not, we wouldn't be here today. I hope nobody paid to you to come to the class. So my point is, at the end of the day, and continuing with the example of Uddhav, I mean, his transformation was in the association of the Vrajavasis. No? He exposed himself to a particular sangha, sadhu sangha,
mm-hmm.
and he was transformed. He had an epiphany. Mm-hmm. And he was Uddhava. No? He was not Bhakta George, if you will. But nonetheless, he showed, even if you are someone like Uddhava, there is place for epiphany, there is place for upgrading. So even if we are however you may like to conceive that, senior devotees, or of course we shouldn't think of ourselves as such, but if one may think, okay, I have been practicing for that many years, I mean, the more we are practicing and the more senior we are, as I said before, the more we should be willing or realizing the prospect for further transformation. No? That should be a case. No, it's not that we should feel, I'm already chanting for 50 years, so I don't need to get that much transforming longer or to learn that much, the contrary. So I will emphasize this point. Exposure to different sadhus that may transform our hearts. I mean, Srila Siddhar Maharaj once described the guru as our own potential appearing in front of us. I really like that definition. In other words, guru, and with guru I don't meaning Diksha guru, the guru principle in general, taking one form or another. A real sadhu, if there's a real sadhu and there's real openness and willingness, there will be some combination between these two sides. So we will perceive in front of certain persons, oh, all that I can be is being reflected in that particular personality. I'm seeing my own prospect in he or she, whoever it may be. I'm not pointing to anyone in particular. I'm not promoting some sadhu or another. I'm just establishing the general principle that real sadhu sangha is a transformational experience. Technically speaking, sadhu sangha is not just like a social gathering. Like, hello, how are you? Nice, okay. Did you see the news yesterday? Okay, more halava, please. Okay, see you tomorrow, bye. That's not sadhu sangha. Sadhu sangha has to be transformative, has to be in pursuit of truth. So we should look for that. Srila Rupa Goswami, when he speaks about sadhu sangha in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, he mentions three elements of sadhu sangha: swajatiya, swatavara, and snigdasya. So we say sadhu sangha has to be performing an affectionate environment. There has to be affection. It's not just like imposed thing, associate with him, reveal me your mind, Prabhu. It has to be a flow of affection, confidence. Swajatiya, it has to be done between people of the same nature. We have to feel, okay, we are speaking the same language, we are part of the same species here, because there can be different natures among Vaishnavas as well. So we need to find a place where we feel we fit according to who we are and who we can be. And swatavara, which means we have to associate with devotees who are higher than us. That's very important. And sometimes we forget that. And we just, again, the notion of sadhu sangha dilutes to the point of just sharing on just on certain level. I'm not saying everyone is doing that, but I've seen that sometimes, and the tendency maybe in all of us, we have to be careful of that. That sadhu sangha doesn't become a place of complacency, basically. No? It's just like a social circle where everyone is looking for validation in one way or another. No? For my daily dose of kijais. No? But sadhu sangha has to be a again, epiphany, transformational experience. And transformation won't happen in the comfort zone, as I like to say. You have to be taken out of the comfort zone, and then real learning can happen. That's the role of the guru. Guru won't keep the disciple in the comfort zone. Guru will challenge the disciple by his her instructions, words. And the disciple is someone who is willing to do that also, to be taken out of the comfort zone. Again, in an affectionate way, snigdasya, in a certain intimacy, but it's important that these very foundational, preliminary notions are in place, because if that's not accepted, we cannot continue the conversation, basically. So it's important that I'll ask myself, like sometimes people will ask, so who is my guru, where is my guru? I've been searching, but I cannot find him or her, whatever. And the question is, have you asked where is the disciple first? Where I am as a disciple? In other words, am I willing to do all that it takes to be a disciple? Do I know what's expected from a disciple? Because if I have no clue about that, and I'm looking for a guru, probably I will never find him. Although it's here, because the disciple has not yet arrived. So these things are a way of trying to... And again, this is not a black and white thing. It's not like you are disciple, you are not disciple. There are so many levels of discipleship. You know? And we can begin with some degree of that, but that has to be matured and upgraded in time. All of us, no exception. As a natural thing, not as as a imposition, superficial imposition. Srila Prabhupada said, Krishna consciousness is not a superficial imposition. So it's important to find ourselves. First, we have to find someone who reflects all that we can be. That's the best way to find ourselves. Find someone who reflects your potential. We cannot just find ourselves by looking at ourselves. That's not the method. It's not just look inside and find yourself in every sense of the term. No. Why over and over again Shastra is emphasizing having Sri Guru, Diksha Guru, Siksha Guru, Sadhu Sangha over and over and over again as the birthplace of bhakti. So that's an important point. And again, we have to know how to play out the implications of that. So sadhu sangha means I expose myself to certain personalities who touched my heart, in relation to whom I see myself in all that I can be. You know, I see those sadhus and I feel, oh, I would like to be that. Not like imitating them, but just like, oh, I feel attracted towards where they are. Even though I don't have a clue where they are, it's not clear for me, but somehow that's attractive to me. I don't understand even everything they're saying, but I want to go there. Like, I remember once I was giving one lecture in Argentina, and it was more introductory lecture. I mean, at least I thought I was giving an introductory lecture. And the audience were mostly yoga students. So after the class, I asked their teacher, who is a devotee, how it was the class for them. I mean, was it okay? What do you think? You know them better than me. And she told me something very funny. She told me, but very, very interesting. She told me, I look at their faces, Maharaj, she told me, and their expression was, I don't understand anything, but please do not stop. I thought that's a good way of putting what's the epiphany we have in front of. I mean, I don't want to put myself as a sadhu there, but somehow what she said corresponded with the experience that we should have in front of a real sadhu, which is sometimes I may feel this is way beyond my head, and I cannot fully, I am not sure if I'm grasping everything, but there is something that is telling me, continue, don't stop. And I want to be there and I want to go there. It's not that I want to copy that person, but I feel attracted to follow that person.
Mm-hmm. And like Uddhava, when he saw the level of devotion of the Vrijavasis, it was like, that was transformational for him.
Yeah, yeah.
So if we see, you know, devotees doing service and, you know, it's something to aspire for. You know, when you can see that, oh, that devotee is like, not so under the modes of material nature, you know, they're kind of rising above.
Mm-hmm.
Wow, that's exciting, you know,
mm-hmm.
because no one wants to be oppressed by the modes.
Mm. Yeah.
I don't think anybody here does.
Yeah. And on top of that, I will say when we can have a glimpse of the positive attraction that those devotees are having towards serving Guru Krishna, because of course it's not only about getting freed from the modes, that's just like a byproduct of bhakti. I get the point, of course. On one level, we may really need to be free from the modes, and that becomes like our goal. But at one point, we will realize, in comparison to what's actually the goal of bhakti, getting free from the modes is almost like a joke. I don't want to downplay that, but at one point of our progress, that's no longer a concern. That will be just like the natural consequence of absorbing in bhakti. Because you became so much absorbed in the nirgun beyond the modes, that at one point the modes are no longer operative and you forgot that there's something called the modes of nature, basically. Because there you are tied by another rope, not the gunas, but the rope of affection. And Krishna is tied by that rope as well, as we spoke yesterday. So yeah, we need at the end of the day, we need to discover. I mean, if we are really longing for that change and progress, which I, of course, value that you express that honestly, that's half the way already to have the the courage of expressing, I want change, I want to progress, and I feel the need to grow. I mean, that's a lot, because sometimes we may not be willing to acknowledge that, although we all know that that's how it works. So, but yeah, at the end of the day, is finding those personalities that will embody our ideal, basically, no? Our ideal of love for Krishna, our idea of pure devotion personified. We need that so the process becomes real. No? Our goal is prem, but what's prem? I mean, we can say divine love or these things, that what's our experience of that? If we are not there, our experience will be proximity to those who are there. And even we are not there, to be close to those who are there, that's already an experience into itself. No? I mean, someone has prem, I don't have prem, but I get closer to those who have the experience of prem. I may not have the experience of prem, but I will have the experience of someone who has the experience of prem, which is a whole experience unto itself. And probably that's what I need to have eventually, the experience of prem. We have to begin somewhere. And that's the very idea of sadhu sangha. That sadhu or sadhvi will have a particular emotional disposition for Krishna, and that eventually becomes contagious, and we will find ourselves affected by that somehow or other, and wanting to make the necessary changes we have to do in our lives because we feel a commitment with that person, natural, not forced, natural. I feel so inspired by that particular person or those particular personalities that I'm empowered by their example. And I end up doing things that I could never have thought I would be able to do. And I can change things by their empowerment, by their inspiration. And of course, my effort that comes by their inspiration. Because sometimes if we are not enough inspired, we may not be willing to do that much sacrifice or effort because we don't find that much purpose for that. But if you feel that you are like flooded with inspiration, real experiences of that, so much willingness in that direction. So the question is not forcing ourselves to have, how do I make more effort and sacrifice more, but how do I find those personalities that will touch me in such a way that will set me on fire, basically. And having the willingness to be set on fire, for sure. Because, of course, we have to be open for the flame to be kindled. No, that's what has the potential to be activated. No? So the two sides has to be there again, because the sadhu may be there, but we are not there. And the most important thing is that we are there, because even if the sadhu is not there, but you are in the proper place, longing for that, naturally that will attract that particular association sooner or later. We should have full conviction that that will happen. I mean, Krishna is not that cruel. If you really want that, I mean, why he will not bestow that? I mean, that's the thing that he will like to give more than any other thing. So if someone is really longing for that, and we shouldn't doubt that Krishna will make all the necessary arrangements for that to happen. And look attentively, and if that's happening, we have to do our part. And of course, again, some challenges may be there. We may be invited to go beyond certain preconceptions we may be carrying, or certain whatever, prejudices or fears, because that's also getting close to a sadhu. It's like entering fire, basically, no? So we may not be able to immediately jump into the fire. We may be reduced to ashes. But if we get too far, we won't be cooked enough either. We'll end up raw. So we don't want to be raw. We are already tasting ourselves as raw substance, and it doesn't taste that good. So we need to be cooked so we become fit to be offered to Krishna, to Radha Gopi.
I mean, here in Alachua, there's such a wealth, you know, going to the temple or seeing the different activities of the devotees, it's very... it's something to aspire for, you know. You see, like the deity worship or anybody's deity worship, you know, it's very it's enlightening to me to see it. You know, I see, wow, this person is they've got something, you know. Mm-hmm. So it's very, very nice. I've read a little bit, the first couple chapters of your book, and I was just seeing, like, just the last thing I was going to say, it's like that momentary association with...
You're a fast reader.
Huh?
Fast reader.
Oh, I don't know why I'm going to... just, I always remember back when I was in when I was in San Diego, you know, and I didn't get a chance to see Prabhupada in San Diego, but the devotees had posted pictures of Prabhupada when he went to this stadium there. It was a football stadium, Balboa Stadium. It's a big program there. Somewhere or other I missed that. But I constantly remember the fact that just that, you know, few moments association of seeing Prabhupada, from that point on, all of my material designs just, they ended. You know, mm-hmm. Nothing worked anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So there's the example of association. And,
mm-hmm.
So it's, yeah. So on another level, just being with devotees, you know, and just seeing their individual emotional activities. And then going back to the original thing of Uddhava going to Vrindavan, you know, there, wow. So we have that opportunity. And,
yeah.
So
yeah. We should take advantage of Sadhu Sangha. But of course, I will say that there are, again, the degrees of Sadhu Sangha, so there is a more, if you will, generic appreciation of Sadhu Sangha, and it's good that we appreciate every devotee, what they do, their service, their sincerity. Yeah. Also, it's nice to, I mean, at least in one way or another, to have a specific relationship and commitment with certain sadhus through which we learn and we serve and we inquire and we feel that specific connection, be it Srila Prabhupada and whoever one feels that connection with, because bhakti requires a specificity. No? I mean, we appreciate all Vaishnavas, but also we try to, there is some specific commitment in connection with certain sadhus that will especially like, how do you say, like, the Spanish word is coming in my word, not the English one. Among many, one will
rise.
Yeah, whatever. Yeah, thank you. You're being too poetic. Blossoming. It's okay.
So then the always the question is how do we how can we be selective and be certain that what we're getting is valid and truthful and appropriate, you know, following guru, shastra, sadhu, you know, because there is that whole element of, you know, there's controversies and different things that I stay as far away from them as I can, you know, but I'm also very careful, you know, mm-hmm. about where I take my attention. So,
yeah.
You know, that's always the, you know, an issue.
Yeah, of course, we have to exercise caution. It's not that we have just to be naive and let's go everywhere and in the beginning, that's more the mentality, no? Let's go everywhere, it's okay, everyone is devotee, and it's true, but in time you realize, okay, there are differences of mood and opinion and adhikar, and you become a little selective, not downplaying anyone, just, as I mentioned, Swajatiya, Rupa Goswami said, you try to associate with those who share a similar mood, which means not everyone will enter into that group, and it's not that you're being offensive or anything. So one has to pay attention, like, what do I need? In which stage I am? That requires certain introspection. What do I feel I'm lacking? And realizing the things, you start to pay attention and to be open about that and to see where do I find that. And also, again, one should be willing to accept whatever Krishna wants to manifest that, and it may be not in the place that I'm expecting or in the form I am expecting. So many preconceptions we may have. Okay, it has to be from an Indian guy, or whatever, man, not woman, woman, not man, old, not young. But as I said the other day, you know, Parikshit Maharaj was looking for his guru. And he was not thinking, my guru will be only a 16-year-old boy that has to appear naked. I don't think you have that type of preconception before when we're looking for a guru. But that was his guru. Of course, that was the external packaging. He went beyond that and realized, oh, this here is guru there. So, I mean, we should take time, of course. It's not that I'm promoting that you just surrender to a person after a weekend or something. Sanatana Goswami himself is suggesting you take your time, get to know the person, get to know yourself, and it takes time. But we have to palina farichate, just to judge the tree by its fruits. If you feel some genuine inspiration that is undeniable in your heart, because, I mean, when epiphany is coming, that goes way beyond all the mental calculation and all the things that we may be like, let's see, I have to hear from here, not from this person I've heard, this is whatever. It's okay, I'm not saying that, but in certain moments, you will have an experience that totally transpasses all those filters, and you feel like, oh my God, what's going on here? No. And you cannot deny, you cannot just like, no, this is not happening. And Krishna say, why not? You wanted that, it's happening. No? And it may happen again in a direction that you were not expecting, or the direction you may expect, whatever the case, it's not that secondary. My point is, if you're really looking for that thing, for that experience, you won't be putting conditions how that should happen, in which way. I mean, that's secondary. Krishna Bhakti Rasa Bhavitamati Kriyatam Yadi Kutopi Labhyate Chaitanya. Srila Rupa Goswami said, this is a famous verse that Srila Prabhupada said, I took from this verse the inspiration to name my society for Krishna consciousness. So this is a verse from Rupa Goswami's Padyavali, where he's describing Bhakti Rasa, or the experience of Bhakti Rasa in Raganuga Bhakti. And he's saying, basically, whatever you find that, in whenever you find that, take it. Like implying, he's not mentioning, only if it comes in this particular packaging from this particular person, you can take it. If you're really looking for that, I mean, that's, and he then says, tatra laulam api kalam molyam. Laulam, greed is the currency through which you can obtain this. The ultimate gift of Krishna consciousness can be only obtained through spiritual greed. And greed means, if you are really greedy, and you're really greedy, and that thing that you are greedy for appears, you won't start to ask, but let me see if it's come from the packaging that I like. I mean, if you are greedy and that's coming, you will just jump on that. No second thought. So, so of course, we should be educated enough as to know what is expected to hear from a sadhu. I mean, we should not be that naive. Of course, the sadhu is saying, if a person is saying some weird stuff, we should be educated enough to realize, this is not what I should be hearing from a sadhu. But if what a sadhu is telling us really comes in the context of revelation and is backed by Shastra, because that's how a sadhu should speak, it's on the basis of Shastra, and that's touching our hearts, and we give some time, and in time we realize, that's still touching my heart, because you can put yourself to test. Now let's see if this is not just one crazy experience I had only the other day. I realized, no, the more I expose myself to this, it further confirms. So, I mean, Krishna himself is showing that. Again, some degree of caution has to be there, but at the end of the day, we have to judge the by its fruits and results. If we are feeling inspired in Krishna consciousness, that's the most important thing. No? Like when someone asked Srila Siddhar Maharaj, as you know, some of you may know, who is the most important guru? Diksha guru, Siksha guru, I think I told you that the other day we were speaking. And he said, the most important guru is the one who is helping you the most. And you have to have that thermometer with you. And with this, I'm not saying, oh, his best, his worst, not in that type of putting labels, but who is helping you the most? Because guru is not, I mean, gurus are not just like guys competing with one another to see who is best who has more disciples and who inspires more people. real guru, are all working for the same cause. So there's one famous talk by Prabhupada on Guru Tattva, on Guru, and the first thing he says, Guru is one. And he elaborates on that idea of the unity in the principle. He appears as many individuals, but in principle it's one. All of them are serving, pouring water on the same root. They are serving the same cause. They're not ones against each other. So if the guru is bona fide, whatever that sadhu may be, they are all working for the same cause, trying to nourish Shraddha in bhakti, whatever it takes. So it's not like, again, a competition. It's not like, okay, you have to be inspired by me and not by that sadhu because I want you to be inspired by me. I mean, that's nonsense. If you are genuinely inspired in that direction, we will be celebrating that. It's not that we are expecting everyone should be inspired by my particular mood. That won't happen. Even in Golok Vrindavan, it's not that everyone is inspired with the same thing. I mean, Yashoda is inspired thinking Krishna will have nice rest all night, and gopis are inspired by thinking Krishna won't have a moment of sleeping the whole night, and we will dance Rasa Lila with us. So there is differences of opinion, even in the spiritual world. But this is somehow harmonized. It's not conflict. No? So there's, if we feel, as you mentioned, controversy, the controversy sometimes means just we need further dialogue to harmonize something we do not agree with. But disagreement doesn't mean something bad. Disagreement is an invitation for dialogue. And even if we will continue disagreeing, we can agree that we disagree and still love each other. It's no problem. It's not that we have to agree in everything. That's so boring. Imagine if we start to know each other and all of us think the same, feel the same, agree with the same. It's like, I will become desperate. I will jump the window or something. No, and let me get out of here. I will run from Malachi as soon as I can. Everyone thinking the same thing. Oh, I need some diversity. Spice of life.
Speaking of that, you know, I feel like I've dominated too much here in my questions. I know there's so many other questions and thoughts. And that really was, you know, a journey of Uruba.
Okay.
So I appreciate that.
Yeah, without key,
someone
yeah.
Else to,
okay.
You know, please.
Who raised their hand up? Okay.
Before I say my question, just
yes.
A couple of things that came up as you were talking.
Yeah.
One was what Sukadeva Goswami, when he entered, I remember in one of the purports, Prabhupada talks about that same idea of not judging the external packaging when about who to hear from, but he said it's who. You have to hear, don't judge by what they look like or any externals, but what effect does, but you have to hear from them, what effect does that hearing have on you?
Mm-hmm.
And then is that verse about how do you know if you're hearing properly, that it's like, how do you know if you're eating properly? Your hunger goes away, you feel satisfied, and like you said,
yeah.
No, it doesn't matter what anybody says, you know this is right. And it's like when we all join Krishna consciousness, doesn't matter what anybody said, there's a place in you to just knew this is right. And then when you talk about the yoga students, their faces showed that they didn't understand anything, but they didn't want it to stop. So many devotees have said they had that experience with Prabhupada. They didn't understand what he was saying. they just wanted to be with him and keep hearing.
What means they understood something. Pretty much, enough.
So my question, and I've been finding that I want to understand better what is soul. What is a soul? Like, what am I when I say I am a spirit soul?
Hmm.
What is the soul? What is the soul before it has its specific identity and specific form? And is the soul doing anything, especially for somebody who is practicing the path of bhakti? Is the soul, what's the soul doing? Is it doing anything? Is it acting? And the reason this comes up for me is like, if my mind throws up some disturbing feelings about something petty and insignificant, my tendency is to say, I'm this is not me. This is my material mind, my false ego, my false personality reacting here. This is not me. I'm a being separate from the mind and the ego. I'm a spirit soul. And in that moment, I go, well, what is that exactly? Mm. And that's okay. I've heard from sadhus and shastra that that means I am a minute but powerful spark of spiritual energy who is a person, who's conscious, has senses. But I'm also hearing that, but I don't have a specific identity or form yet. So, like, how does that work? That you're a person with senses, but you don't have a form. And somehow I seem to need to conceive of what I am now at this stage, just to help with detaching from the material mind and false ego. And is the soul doing anything?
Okay. Yeah, yeah.
Well, I should say, maybe this is a question that's not askable. Like,
I don't know.
Bhaktivinoda Thakur says about the jiva, when you're asking too many questions about jiva, you told this person, don't keep asking too many more questions. You just have to practice your sadhana. And
this was your first question, so now I cannot tell you that.
We can't conceive of someone.
Yeah, no. No, but it's a very valid question. Thanks for asking. So, yeah, of course, I don't want, like, to sound that I'm sending you to do homework, but in my book, but I know you got it, I speak on that mostly in chapter 7, where I'm quoting the famous verse, Jibera Sarvahai Krishna Nitya Das Krishna Tatasta Shakti Veda Veda Prakash, which somehow describes the identity of the soul in a general way as eternal, possessing eternal, what in Sanskrit may be called dasatva, or a relation of dependence with Krishna, basically. So all souls have that connection with Krishna, with our source. We are dependents. We are servants of Krishna in that sense. We all depend on him. He's our source. Mm-hmm. So the point is that when we say, well, there are basically two questions. Does the soul act? I mean, there are many other questions, but mainly, yeah, the soul has capacity for action. Kartritve, that's mentioned by Srila Jiva Goswami in Paramatma Sandarbha. He enumerates, if I'm not mistaken, 21 qualities of the jiva, of the atma. And one of them is that we have we can act, basically. Now, of course, sometimes we may hear, and that is also important to understand, sometimes scripture will say, I don't know, we don't have body, we don't have senses, but it's referring to we don't have those things in a material sense. Or sometimes we may hear, soul is not acting, and that will refer to the sense of action that we experience in this world, that we will feel, okay, I'm the whatever. No? Prakrite kriyamana nigunai karmani sarvasaha. Ahankara vimodat makartaham iti manjati. The very idea of ahankar means ahankara, I do. And that's what we call false ego. So we may think, okay, false ego means the idea that I do, but it's false ego. So then that it means that then I do not do in my real ego. No, it doesn't mean that. It only means that in our conditioned state, we have a false sense of doership, in the sense of we feel we are the center and everything revolves around us, and we are identified, of course, with body, mind, sense, complex, and we think that's who we are. And on that basis, that's false. That's not us. So who we are, of course, in general terms, we can say we are a soul. But Krishna himself had this, I don't want to say difficulty, but he made this point in chapter 2 of the Gita, when he started to describe Arjuna, what's the soul? And if you remember, mostly everything that he says is in negative terms, what the soul is not. Because it's so difficult to say what's the soul, in the sense that the soul is something totally, consciousness is beyond material experience. And if we have only had mostly material experiences till now, how can I describe to you something that goes beyond what you have experienced till now? Because generally, when I describe to you something, I have to compare it with something you know. If I cannot give you a point of reference, what's the meaning of describing anything that goes beyond your experience? You follow? If I tell you, I don't know, I name some animal that you don't know, and you say, which is that animal? And I have to compare that with something you know. Because if I speak about the unicorn, we have been speaking about that these days, unicorns, and the possibility of them about 8,400,000 species, whatever. Okay, you know a horse. So I may compare that. Okay, there is something like horse, but with one big stuff there. No? But if you don't even know what's a horse, for some reason, that starts to be problematic. And I will ask you, what do you know? A cow. So I will say, okay, a unicorn is not a cow. I also know dinosaurs. Okay, a unicorn is not a dinosaur. So I start to describe what the unicorn is by saying what it's not, because that's the only thing you can relate to. Similarly, Krishna in the Gita starts to say to Arjuna, actually to us as conditioned souls, the soul cannot be burned, cannot be dried, cannot be moistened, cannot be killed, because that's what we experience in the material plane. So all those things are not happening to the soul. But still he's not saying anything about what the soul is, interestingly. And the very end of his description, he mentions one verse, where he says something about the soul in a positive sense. But it's interesting that whatever he says, he uses the same word three times. And the word is Ascharyabhat. He says three times, Ascharyabhat, Ascharyabhat, Ascharyabhat. As you know, in our tradition, you will see this in many verses, three times something is repeated. Hare Nam, Hare Nam, Hare Nam, Aiva Kevalam, Kalo Nasti Eva, Nasti Eva, Nasti Eva. Sadhu Sangha, Sadhu Sangha, Sadhu Sangha, Sarva Shastra Ko, Lava Matra, Sadhu. Now, these three times repetition means emphasis. So Ascharyabhat in this verse by Krishna means basically like wonderful. So when Krishna gets to say something about the Atma, he says, it's wonderful, wonderful, wonderful. And that's what he says. Which for us may sound like, okay, no? Thank you for flattering me that way. That sounded nice coming from Krishna. No, you're wonderful. Okay, thank you. He knows how to grab us. But yeah, what's the meaning of wonderful also? No, because, I mean, that's a word in one sense. And we say wonderful to so many things that are not the soul. Are not that wonderful. So actually when Krishna is saying you are wonderful three times, actually he's speaking about the potential of the soul. Of course the soul by itself in comparison to matter is wonderful. But in relation to all that the soul can be, that's really, for Krishna, to have something to be wonderful. I mean, Krishna is he's Rasik Sekar. No? He's the highest connoisseur of spiritual experience. So he won't use the word wonderful in a cheap way. We may say wonderful to an ice cream or something. But Krishna won't say wonderful to something different from bhakti, I will say. Because that's the only experience he has. Krishna is not going outside of the influence of bhakti, of Swarup Shakti. So when he, and that's wonderful for him, he says that many times. So if he speaks of the soul as wonderful, he's speaking up the soul's prospect in connection to bhakti, because that's our potential as tatastha jivas. And I know this may sound a little tricky, but it's important that we understand this principle. We cannot define something without considering its potential. That's even was said by Albert Einstein once, so it's not just limited to Gaudiya Vedanta. In science also they say, if you redefine something, you have to define that for what it is and for all that it can be. You have to include all the potential of that particular thing in its definition. So that the same applies to us. We are something, we are Atma, we are the soul, we have these qualities, agency, Satchit Ananda, and so many things. We are inherently in connection with our source and depending on Krishna in that sense. We are Nitya Krishna Das. But also we have a potential on top of that, being Tathasta Jivas. If we associate with bhakti, a particular form of bhakti, that's who we are ultimately. I will say that's how we should think about ourselves. We have been touched by bhakti. that mercy has come to our door. Don't ask why. Don't try. Don't ask why, because you will be end up losing. There's no reason, technically speaking, from our side. But Jadrichaya, Bhagavatam uses that term over and over again. Jadrichaya. Bhakti comes out of its own will to us. No need to ask, but why are you coming to me? I do not deserve that. And Bhakti will say, that's why I'm coming, if you will. So a particular type of bhakti will come, and we will be influenced by that. And that will become our eternal prospect in life and all that we can be. And that's who we are, although we are not there yet in one sense. But that prospect has been extended to us. So I will say that in that connection, when we think about ourselves, as devotees, I don't think we should just think, I'm a spirit soul. I mean, I'm not saying that that's wrong. I'm saying that's not all of the equation. I mean, if you pay attention to our great Vaishnavas and what to speak of liberated personalities, they are not saying we are spirit souls. What Mahaprabhu is saying, that's the verse I quoted, I think, 2 days ago or yesterday. I don't remember any longer when. So Mahaprabhu is not saying, he starts saying, I'm not Brahman, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Sudra. Nahi. I'm not Sannyas, Brahmachari, Grihastha, Vanaprastha. Nahi, 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 nahi. And he doesn't say then, I am so. He's saying, I'm a servant of the servant of the servant of the servant of Sri Krishna, the beloved of the gopis. So he's presenting a very, on some level, very specific designation. He's not saying overtly, I'm Krishna tasting Radha Bhav. He's not getting that specific. But if you read between the lines, he's saying that. So, but basically the general idea is, I'm a servant of Krishna. That's what he's saying. So we should think that's who I am, not only a soul. A soul is more, of course I'm a soul, but what's a soul? What's the potential of the soul to engage in bhakti? And that potential has come, I mean, the elements to activate the potential have come to us. So we should respond to that by seeing ourselves according to that potential. I don't think that's to be a sahaja, no? Because someone may say, oh, you think you are a servant of Krishna, but you are still conditioned soul. I don't think that's necessarily the case. I mean, of course, we may be conditioned on some level, but we cannot deny bhakti's presence in our life. No? So we may not be siddhas yet, may not be perfected beings, but we are sadhakas. That's another way of identifying ourselves. Who I am? I'm a sadhaka, which means I'm a practitioner of bhakti. I'm someone engaged in sadhana with this particular sadhya in goal in mind, this goal in mind. So that's a whole sense of identity that we can entertain, that is not unreal. It's not that we are forcing something. That's who we are. I'm a practitioner and I'm having the hope of becoming perfected in this particular practice of becoming a servant of Krishna, a lover of Krishna. On some degree, the ideal has come. I'm enchanted by that. I have accepted that on some level. And then it's just a matter of time that it actualizes completely. So I would say it's better that we identify ourselves like that, not so much like, okay, this crazy thought is coming to my mind. I'm a soul, I'm a soul, I'm a soul. I'm not the mind. I'm not the mind. Yes, I'm not the mind, but I can use my mind in Krishna's service. That's much more user-friendly than just trying to reject bad stuff and saying, I'm a soul. On top of that is, I'm Krishna Das. So if I have mind, senses, functions, I have to engage them. Krishikena Hrishikeshevanam Bhakti Ruchate. That's the very definition of bhakti. Use your senses for the pleasure of the master of the senses. Use your mind. And that's the topmost instruction in the Gita. The final instruction of the Gita is manmana. Manmana means give me your mind, Krishna is saying. Think about me. Do not just reject bad thoughts, but smartabhyasat tam vishnur bishmartabhyana jatu chit sarve vidhir nishedasya retayore vakinkara. The essence of all scriptural advice is always think of Krishna, never forget him. So it's not just reject bad stuff in your mind. Try to absorb in Krishna. And naturally bad stuff will go away. So yes, we have a material body, material mind, but being sadhakas implies our mind, our body, our chitta becomes spiritualized. Nitya Siddha Krishna Prem Sadhya Kabunai Shravanadi Suddha Chitta Karayodhai. So by engaging, this verse is describing sadhana bhakti. By engaging in sadhana and receiving bhakti samskars, devotional impressions in sadhu sangha, our chitta, who is the storehouse for all of our material impressions, will become purified. And not only that, but will be spiritualized. And all our body, and senses and mind will become spiritualized. That's the idea of bhakti. It's not just reject your body, reject your mind and senses because they are not atma. Yeah, they are not atma. But bhakti is so potent that can penetrate all the pores of your body and make them spiritual. That's why the body of great personalities is put in samadhi and not burned, to indicate that body is totally spiritual, no longer material. And in that same body, that person is serving Mahaprabhu eternally in Nityanavali. So you can see till which point my Guru Maharaj likes to say, okay, on one level we have heard we are not this body, and there's a place for that. But on another level, as sadhakas, we can think, I am this body. Because this is a body of a sadhaka. So we can identify as a sadhaka and utilize this body, which means this mind and senses, because the body is made of that, in the service of Krishna. You need to identify as a sadhaka so you can use those things in the service of Krishna. If you are not identified with them, you won't be using them in the service of Krishna. So it's important that we identify with our body. Interesting. That's an interesting twist of events. Now, in the beginning, of course, you are not this body because we were so engrossed in living a beast-like life. So stop, you are not, Prabhupada says, you are not this body. Stop there, please. Guys, stop. No more LSD, no more this stuff. You are not that. Okay. Red light, stop that. But in time, you realize there's place for thinking, I am this body. Because this body, Prabhupada said, you are not that body. You are not this body. This body means this body, as you think of your body. But when Guru is giving you mantra, and Kantimala and Tilak, your body is no longer that body. Now it's another body, it's Sadhaka Deha. Dikshakale Bhaktakare Atma Asamarpana. Rupa Goswami said the same thing. Seva Sadhaka Rupena Siddha Rupena Chatrahe. One of the three main verses describing Raga Nuga Bhakti. You have to serve Krishna in your Sadhaka Deha, with the body of practitioner. So you cannot engage your senses for Krishna's pleasure if you first do not identify with them. If you are just saying, I'm not my mind, I'm not my sense, I'm not my mind, I'm not my senses, you won't be able to offer them to Krishna. So Krishna is saying, please, connect with those elements and offer them to me. In that sense, if you dedicate your mind and senses to Krishna, in that sense you are your mind and senses. We are our sadhaka deha. And when you fully play out your sadhaka deha in sadhana, you fully apply yourself in sadhana, again, that sadhaka deha becomes so spiritualized that technically becomes your eternal body through which you will be serving in eternity. So you can see to which degree this body that in the beginning you are not this body can become your body for eternity. That's the power of bhakti in between. You are not this body, but with bhakti in the equation, that can be your body for eternity. Well, that's why we have all the pictures of our acharyas on the altar. The altar represents a portal into eternity. So those pictures represent, they are in eternity in those bodies serving there. So yeah, bhakti is pretty user-friendly, as we like to say. No, it's not that we need to reject anything, but to as you mentioned, this verse from the Bhagavatam, Bhakti Parishanu Bhava Virakti Ranjatra Chaisya Trika Ekakala Pratpadi Manasya Jatashnata Sustusti Pushti Shudapa Yonogasham. Today I was just studying that verse also in Bhakti Sandarbha Jiva Goswami concludes the whole treatise with that verse, with verse from the Bhagavatam, which says, like in the same way that someone who is hungry when eating will experience simultaneously three things. No? Will experience some taste, some like stomach feeling, not that feeling, but the stomach is filled. Satisfaction, thank you. And eradication of hunger at the same time. So similarly, there are different interpretations of the verse, but someone who go through bhakti will experience prem, will experience darshan of Bhagavan, parishanubhav, and will virakti, which means detachment. Because of the other things. In the same way, because of eating, you no longer have hunger. That comes like a byproduct. So similarly, by engaging in the positive, if you will, side of bhakti, which is positive, all is positive, naturally all these other things will come. So personally, I find that much, at least in thinking in my own, how I'm trying to deal with my own mind, if you will, it's not so much about like type of denial process, but just how do I become more skilled in using this? Because, I mean, as we were speaking the other day, sometimes in order to see our brightest potential, it may be useful to glimpse at our darkest potential. So I don't think it's very difficult to think where our mind can take us in the dark side. We know which are those sections. And we only know one level of that. You can always get darker and darker. We don't want to go there. That's enough. It's enough dark. So you see, okay, my mind has such a potential of penetrating to darkness. Now, just if I use that same potential and power of penetration into another direction, where my mind can take me. And that can be such a vehicle. So that's the idea, trying to think in those terms. How can I maximize all that my mind can offer so that can facilitate my ultimate goal?
So it's not effective for me to try and think about the senses that are little spiritual spark has. It's not effective for me to try to think about the senses that that spiritual spark, who is the soul, has.
Mm-hmm.
It feels like it's still a separate thing.
I mean,
it's not using those senses, or the only way it can be used right now is through this sadhakadeya, through this body. Is that what I'm thinking?
Technically speaking, the atma doesn't have senses.
Oh, that's okay. That's what I wondered.
Yeah. It is described in Shastra that the Atma needs a particular body to express itself, if you will, whether it be a material body or a spiritual body. So now we are materially embodied, so we have senses, mind, through which the Atma can express itself, if you will. And if that's done properly in connection with bhakti in this case, the senses and body and citta, this particular body, can get spiritualized. Totally.
So being a spark of spiritual energy with consciousness, but that's why I was wondering, how can you have senses but you don't have a form? So you're just a conscious entity, and it's expressing itself now through this medium. And that's what you said. Your most effective way is just I'm a servant of Krishna, and this is what I have to use to serve.
Yeah, and eventually the more this general idea, because it's still to say I'm servant of Krishna is a general idea. It's not like the ultimate identity. I mean, there's so much detail of that, as I like to say, the devotees sometimes. And our process is so specific. Now, because if I ask you, what's the goal of life? Even, I'm not asking you, who are you ultimately? What's the goal of life? Someone may tell, Krishna Prem. Okay. So that's somewhere, that's a specific. So I may ask, which type of Prem for which form of Krishna? Because Krishna, there's Krishna in Vrindavan, Krishna in Mathura, Krishna in Dwarka. There are so many types of prem in relation to all these many types of Krishna. So that's still Krishna prem is a generic idea. Of course, that's something, you know, for most people, what's the goal of life? I don't want to hear what they have to tell. So to say Krishna Prem, that's a long way. But still, there is something more. No? And you may say, okay, Krishna Prem means Prem for Krishna and Vrindavan. Okay, which type of Prem? Sakya Prem, Dasya Prem, Vatsalya Prem, Madhurya Prem. What Madhurya Prem? Okay, which type of Madhurya Prem? Parakiya Bhav, Swakiya Bhav, or Parakiya Bhav? Okay, which type of Parakiya Bhav? That Babichatmika Sambhogi Chamai, direct union with Krishna, or serving this the Naika who has direct union with him? The last one. Of course, this doesn't happen like this. It's not like you go to the supermarket and give me one Parakiya Bhav and I want to taste that. It's not like that. It comes by sadhusanga. But my point is, so again, okay, I want to serve under Sri Radha's guidance, Manjari Bhav, whatever, okay, under the group of which Yudheshwari, which group leader. And my point is, there are so many further details that eventually have to be figured out or revealed. So we can, okay, now this is who I am in every single sense of the term. So that will gradually be manifested with the corresponding identity in the braj and body and color, sari color or dhoti color, depending on the case. I mean, there's so much, my point is degree of a specificity that eventually will be revealed. But yeah, at least we have to begin with this general, okay, not coming the word. Sorry? Yeah, this general idea of I'm a servant of Krishna, I'm a sadhaka, I have the chance of engaging my mind and senses in the service of Sri Guru and the Vaishnavas. And with this understanding and faith, the more I apply myself to sadhana in this way, the more gradually everything will become even more and more clear, who I am in every sense. But the point is, if I already know I'm a disciple of my Gurudev, and I'm not doing all that I could do regarding that sense of identity, I shouldn't be asking it further than that. Because I won't get any answers. The answer will be just, I mean, be fully a servant first. No? I mean, if I'm being a 60% disciple, and I ask Krishna, which is my Siddha Deha in Vrindavan, you will hear the wind replying back to you, like there's still 40% remaining in Guru Seva. No? So we should also have this type of like integrity, you know, of honesty, okay, and implicit faith that of course everything will come by the mercy of Bhagavan, by the achintya shakti of Srinam. We should educate our faith and have full faith in all the things. That's an important part that we have to do. Educate our faith on the basis of Shastra, Shastriya Shat, and have intense faith on this thing. Not in a dogmatic way, but on the basis of revelation and experience. And then apply ourselves accordingly. And the result has to come. Shastra is saying, has to come. If it's not happening, you are doing something wrong. Like this example, if you're hungry and you eat, I mean, it has to come. You have to stop being hungry at one point. If you are eating after an hour and still you are hungry, I mean, you are Bhima or something like that. Well, today is his day, Bhima Ekadasi. But in general, it has to. The hunger has to stop because you are eating. But hopefully, if you are eating in the proper place, of course, if you try to put the food in your ear, it's not happening, Maharaj. I'm trying to eat and I'm still hungry. No, but the food goes here. Oh, okay. It's not happening. But what you are eating? A piece of wood. No, that's not food. This is food. Okay. Oh, now it's working. So the same thing with bhakti. It will work, but you have to put the food, the proper food in the proper hole, if you will. Because if not, we'll feel, oh, nothing is happening with my bhakti. It's not that it's bhakti's fault. You are being invited to be introspective and think what I may be doing wrong here. Because bhakti is perfect. So what I may be doing wrong, maybe I'm chanting inattentively, I'm engaging in samaparad, I'm being complacent. I mean, it's an invitation for, as one person says in Argentina, brutal honesty. That's what it means to be a sadhaka. No? Yeah, Vinod Bani.
I once had this conversation privately with Trivari Swami.
Which conversation?
I'm talking about Siddha Deha.
Uh-huh.
And I was speculating, and he just stopped me. He said, stop. He said, focus on Dasya to Mahaprabhu.
That's one of his classical points, which of course I appreciate, no? Because, our entry point to Braja Lila is Gaur Lila. So the question is what we are doing about Gaur Lila, how much we are taking advantage of that, how much we are understanding that. No, these days we have been speaking about Gaur Lila some days ago, and hopefully we have had some glimpses, I had, of all that Gaur Lila is and more. So the point is that it's not just to take for granted, Gaur Lila is just like entry ticket and then go, let's go to the real goal. No. And again, Gaur Lila entails my relationship with Sri Gurudev, me as a sisya, as a disciple. How do I apply myself in dasya towards Sri Guru and the Vaishnavas? Sometimes we want to skip the chapter and want the Madhurya experiences, whatever, quickly of Braj. But all the experiences in Braj are sustained on a foundation of dasya, of divine slavery, in the words of Srila Siddhar Maharaj. Everyone has that disposition there. So if you don't pass first that test, don't go for the PhD, if you will. First you have to prove yourself worthy in the eyes of Mahaprabhu, if you will, in the eyes of Bhakta Brinda. So, my hope Guru Maharaj likes to say that. He says that if you get initiation and someone asks you, so did you receive a Siddha Deha? And you can reply, well, I received a Sadaka Deha. Is that too little? And my Guru Maharaj will say, the more you apply yourself in your sadhaka deha, naturally the siddha deha will come. So you don't need a separate process to attain that. I mean, siddha deha will come as a result of proper use of sadhaka deha, of doing all that you can do with what you have now. Because sometimes we enter into this idea that, well, I'm missing something, I would like to get that, and maybe going here. But maybe what you are missing is you are not doing all that you can do with what you have at present. That's a real question we should be having, doing with ourselves, before asking, maybe I should go here and there and take this and that. But the question is, with whatever you have now, today, Friday, whatever, June 10th, whatever day may be, are you doing all that you can do with that, or you are not taking full advantage of that? If you realize, no, I could do it better. So, as my Guru Maharaj said, stop. Stop there. And try to take full advantage of the gift that already came, because it's a form of ungratefulness, if not. Krishna is giving something with a certain potential. We are not taking full advantage, and we are asking more. Krishna, a little bit more. And Krishna will say, but I already send you more. You are not seeing that. And for sure, if he sends us more, probably 5 minutes after that, Krishna, send me more. Because we have not learned to take advantage. So it's this idea of causeless mercy and praying for mercy is a fine line. We can end up in abuse. Just more and give me. But we are not doing anything or not too much with what he's sending. So it's... We can ask for mercy so we can take advantage of the mercy that already came. Instead of thinking something is missing. Yeah, something is missing, myself doing my right part. So Gaur Lila can give everything. Harinam can give everything, technically speaking. When someone asks Sri Gaur Kishore Babaji Maharaj, can you reveal to me my Siddha Deha? Babaji Maharaj said, That information is residing between the syllables of the holy name. Like implying, if your chanting has not revealed that to you, keep chanting. You are not chanting totally purely yet. And that's a big point. I mean, Srila Bhakti Pramod Puri Goswami Maharaj will make that point over and over and over again. Some devotees will go with these ideas, like if something is missing, I lack, I want more, I want the real thing or whatever. And he'll say, Baba, please try to chant Sudha Nam. Are you chanting Sudha Nam? Are you avoiding all aparad to Srinam? And of course, coming from someone like him, who's really chanting Sudha Nam, who's the personification of humility, it will really touch your heart. He was asking, Sudan, try to chant the pure name and try to understand how everything you feel it's missing will come from that. But if you are not doing all that you can to chant the pure name, please do not come with this list of questions. Try to do your homework. And of course, get the association that will inspire you to chant the pure name, get properly educated to chant the pure name. It all converges in try to chant the pure name, and everything will reveal from that Chintamani, Nam Chintamani Krishnas. So we need, yes, Sadhu Sangha and so many things. So when we sit to chant, everything happens by that. Of course, Prabhupada said chant and be happy, and he was correct, but for that formula to work, we need to have certain Sangha and certain Shravan and certain nourishing. So we will chant from a certain place that will bring the nectar, if you will. So yeah, that's a fact. It's important to not cheat ourselves in this connection, no? Because if not, we may just always think, I need something more, and I think something more, and we may be going to so many places and getting so many things, and you will always still feeling there's something missing, because again, the thing that is missing is this thing that was missing from the very beginning. And we are not accepting that and running here and there. It's a similar thing that what we do in the material experience. We are feeling something is missing and trying to fill that existential hole with money, sense enjoyment, and power, whatever. It's not working, something missing. And then we may think, okay, we'll hear from this side, well, we'll get this, and we'll read this, and we'll go there, and still something missing, because, yeah, we may not be doing our homework. Simple as that, no? So, yeah. Well, thank you. So, 7:30, we are right on time on the legal Tatashta line. So, we can finish here. I don't know if there are any one last question before finishing. They're very burning questions that won't allow you to have good resting tonight.
Actually, I was thinking more about that.
Yes.
It's always interesting to me, and I can never really figure it out, why this excessive need to know the Siddhadev.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you found out whoever you were, it's really no different than chanting, because that's the ultimate goal.
Mm-hmm.
So I can't figure out why this, excitement about it.
Yeah, of course, I couldn't tell in general, because in every case there may be some particular background that takes some people to, I would like to know this for one reason, another for this reason, and in some reasons, yeah, it's not the deeper reasons, no, that the deepest of reasons that why they want to know that.
Yes.
Actually, it's not a fact of wanting to know, but basically the real idea will be, I want to serve Krishna in such a way that there has to be a naturally corresponding identity for that to happen. So instead of wanting to know certain details about that, is wanting to know how I developed the proper mood of service that naturally will bring forth a siddhadeha that will be necessary for that to happen.
Yeah.
But of course, this is not like we are not in a rush like to get there as soon as possible, like a prize. Okay, I got my siddhadeha. Do you have your siddhadeha? Not? Oh, I got mine. Sorry. It's not that type of game.
Yeah,
because
that's what I'm talking about. Because you bring up a good point, though, about, if you have a certain thing, like you want to say, make Krishna's noontime lunch.
Mm.
That's all you think about.
Mm.
I mean, for me, that's very advanced in the way I live in this world. So I can understand that, but I don't know how many people are at that to actually make that connection.
To be honest, generally not many people. I mean, generally, Krishna himself is saying that, no, in the Gita, Manushyanam, Sahasrasu. For many people, only a few ones are looking transcendence. From those, only a few ones attain perfection. From those, a few ones get to know me. No? So he's making the point. This is not a cheap thing.
Yeah.
Of of course, it's a goal for all, but it doesn't mean that we will attain that like right now or tomorrow or in this lifetime even, which is shouldn't be a problem. Because again, if we are already on the path and we have faith in the path and mercy is coming, it's just a matter of time. It may take one lifetime, two lifetimes. I mean, no problem. We are not, if we are doing what we are doing in bhakti from the, in the correct place, we don't want to go anywhere else. I mean, we should be so happy and satisfied with what we are doing.
No?
Yeah, and but Jiva Goswami in that verse gave the point interestingly, because that's an analogy, no? The one of eating. So he said, when you eat and are satisfied, you cannot continue eating. No, you have to stop. But there are exceptions to the rule. But Jiva Goswami's point is, at some point you have to stop eating. At some point. But he says, with bhakti, you can continue forever. It's not that I'm satisfied, no more bhakti, please.
Yeah.
The more satisfied you are, the more bhakti you embrace. So,
yeah,
exactly. So the point is, if you are doing that from the proper place, you are not even thinking about where to go or I need, because you are finding everything there.
Yeah.
And by being in, by behaving in that way, everything else will come in time. And the devotee shouldn't be like calculating like when the Siddha Deha or when will, because you are really having such a good time serving, if you will. Once Srila Siddhar Maharaj said that, no? Some devotees were asking him too many questions like this, and he said, but bhakti is such a nice thing. That was his reply. but bhakti is such a nice thing. Why are you so concerned about getting out of this world and transcending samsara or getting this or that? If that's such a great thing and you have the chance of doing that now, why are you giving place in your mind to some other thing, which is, I mean, just focusing how nice bhakti is, and everything will come from that.
I think also like the Buddhists on that level, they're so absorbed in their service. They don't usually have time for anything other than that, specifically that service, in order to do it in a way that is pleasing to Krishna.
Mm.
So they are fully satisfied in that sense. Of course they have aspirations, as you say, there's never an end to increasing bhakti. But it's a little bit more authentic, natural.
It has to be uncontainable. Like you are doing your homework so nicely that the fruits of that will come in a way that you cannot resist. Even if you want to resist, you cannot.
And then like, put yourself, it like that. You want to pour it out to other people.
That will
so
overflow you.
Overflow and you want to give.
So that was Mahaprabhu's example.
And he
will chant in such a way. That my Guru Maharaj likes to say, some people will say, Mahaprabhu, ordinary people say, he was an epileptic.
Yeah.
No, his seizures. Yeah. But my Guru Maharaj will say, but epilepsy is not contagious. But what Mahaprabhu did was contagious. Mm-hmm. No, he was like overflowing, sprinkling everyone, and just seeing him was like transforming everyone. No, because he was practicing so nicely, if you will, that created everything else. And eventually we see what happened with Mahaprabhu's, I mean, he's of course Bhagavan himself, but somehow he's given an example of stages in the life of a practitioner on a pretty extraordinary level, but nonetheless, he's practicing, chanting, doing Harinam Sankirtan in the streets, being a public person, preaching, but he's doing all that in such a nice way. What's the result of that? Eventually, he enters into Gambhira, and he's absorbed into his inner world. So my point is, similarly, as sadhaka should practice in a way that at one point his inner absorption will become so capturing that person may be 24 hours thinking how to prepare lunch for Krishna, basically.
What else could it be? Because the goal is to be a full servant of Krishna. So what else could happen?
So and we should have that full trust also, no? Because sometimes I hear devotees thinking, Maharaj, I have to try to do it as Someone wrote to me the other day, like from Colombia, Maharaj, someone read my hands or something some years ago and told me that I won't live longer. And this person is still young and told me, and I just met the devotees. So I know that I only have like, whatever, 10 years or something. It was from a good place. No, and I want to really take it seriously and attain the goal in my life. And I was internally thinking, 10 years only, I don't know if you will make it. I mean, you seem pretty serious, but I tried to make the point to her, do not be concerned about like calculating. I don't know if I will make it in 10 years. Probably you may not even die in 10 years. And if even if you do so, if you are serious about practicing, you have to have full faith that Krishna will protect you and will grant you further opportunities of serving him in the next situation. It's not that you will be born as a pig in Patala Loka or something. No? Oh, I will lose my human life, form of life. I mean, if you really want to serve Krishna, do you think Krishna is that cruel that will... No. Animal... if you really want that, he's making that promise over and over again in Shastra. Kaunteya pratija nihinami bhakta pranashati. No? Declare that my devotee never perishes. Nihabikramanasasti. In this process, there is no loss or diminution. All these like assurances, like yogakshimam bahamyaham. I provide my devotee what he needs. I give what he lacks. I keep. So Krishna is trying to say to us, just engage in bhakti nicely. I do the whole other part. You do your part, and you trust that I'm doing my job. No, that's one of the aspects of Sharanagati. Goptritui rakshishati vishvaso goptritui varanantata. One, the main aspects of surrender is to have full faith. Krishna will protect me.
Yeah, I was thinking that that person, the way Krishna could show the mercy to that person is that what they did in 10 years might be equal to 20 years because it would have been so serious and didn't waste any time, which is something, you know, that is so important.
Yeah, we can, of course, calculate. Actually, when Pariksit Maharaj went to Sukadev Goswami, and we know he didn't have him in 20 years or anything, he had 1 week. And he knew he had 1 week. In this case, it was not just some fuzzy hand reading. I mean, it was a Brahmin's course that will happen. And he asked Sukadev Goswami, I have 1 week, and I'm really serious about attaining your ultimate goal. And he was really serious. We spoke the other day about Pariksit, his very name, is the examiner, and he was really... And he asked Sukadev Goswami, I have only 1 week. Is that enough? And Sukadev Goswami kind of chuckled and said, like, 1 week? That's a lot.
1 second.
Yeah. Only 1 second of proper focus and absorption. It's not about quantity, but quality. Only once chanting Sudhanam, Labha Matra Sadhu Sangha Sarva Siddhi Ho, only 1 millisecond of Sadhu Sangha, all perfection. So... In potential, that can happen in a moment. In practice, it may not happen that quickly because of some other things, but there is place for that. And Krishna can give some extraordinary mercy. And, and we know he's extraordinarily merciful, so that's our hope also. No, he's not like a cruel guy on the cloud, like just throwing thunderbolts to everyone or something. No, he's...
Well, it feels that way sometimes.
It's a loving thunderbolt.
Because he knows what we need.
Yeah.
And that's not always easy, as Arjun knows in her work, how hard that is for us to accept, isn't it? It's very hard to accept difficulties and thunderbolts, and especially if they go for a long time.
Mm-hmm. Every one of us has, our own, journey to share. But I'm sure that all of you try our best not to fall into like victim consciousness and Krishna is the one to blame, but although as hard as it may be, and I'm sure all of us can, I mean, I can tell you so many horrors movies that I have to go through. but at the end of the day, and from the bigger picture, you always realize this was the best possible thing that could happen to me. In the moment, I think this is the worst thing, in theory, at least, I should know, no. Although I feel like this, I know there's a bigger picture and I have to be patient.
Yeah.
Utsaha nishchaya dairat, like Prabhupada will say, no? Utsaha, be enthusiastic, Upadeshamrita, third verse. And one may say, yeah, but I cannot just be enthusiastic, like, okay, I will be enthusiastic today. No, I'm trying, but it's not working. So nishchaya, no? Second verse is like, try to make some effort, no? With confidence, with faith. Okay. And you may say, I'm trying, but it's not happening.
Yeah, right.
So the third word is dhairyat, which means patience.
Patience.
patience. Sometimes it's not easy to be patient. No? But Prabhupada Bhaktisiddhanta will say, through patience, when we exhibit patience in front of the arrangement that Krishna is making in our life, that's one of the main ways we are showing our faith to him.
Yeah.
And we are telling to him, I trust you. Although I don't have a clue why you are doing this, what's taking place, and when it will end, I will like, but it's not ending. At the end, I want to have unconditional trust. Because looking back, I know that you were always doing the right thing.
Now, is that the intelligence or the mind doing that?
Sorry again?
Is that the intelligence?
Yeah. Intelligence have to do with this. Yeah, proper discrimination and proper determination. So patience is a form of determination, because you need to really be determined, okay. And just not waiting. No, patience is not like a passive thing, like, okay, I have to wait till this ends. But because we may think like that, no, like, or I have to tolerate. Okay, I have to tolerate. I have to be tolerant. And then like, it's over? Not yet. Okay, I have to tolerate. Krishna, let me know when it's over, so I have to stop doing this stuff. But that's not the type of tolerance that Mahaprabhu is asking. It's to learn in the process of waiting, no? Try to learn the process of tolerating, because the concept of tolerating, try to give yourself. No? He gives the example of the tree, no? Which is unique. Bhaktivinoda Thakur translates Tarura Pisa Ishranas, pure compassion free from envy. He doesn't say tolerance. Because why? Because the tree is mostly giving while tolerating. It's tolerating heat, cold, rain. Someone who didn't find a closed restroom and is urinating on the tree. But the tree is giving shade, air, fruit, shelter, blah, giving. Giving so much that at one point the tree forgot, oh, I'm tolerating this guy urinating on me. At one point you are so absorbed in giving that you don't feel any longer that you have to tolerate. Of course, we cannot imitate that, but we should know, we should get to that point where and we know that's happening. Some things we feel, oh, I have to tolerate this situation or this person. But some other person is not feeling that. It's not feeling, I have to tolerate. So actually, the question is, actually, do I have to tolerate the person or the situation or something in me that is making me see the situation as something that I have to tolerate? And if it's something in me, then I have to conclude, oh, then others have to tolerate me having that stuff.
Yes.
No, like we did Guru Nishtha made the joke recently with that idea that the ones I made in the class that you have Paramatma and after a few lifetimes Paramatma is leaving some message that, oh, I'm tired of this guy. I mean, too much tolerance. No, I'm leaving. Find someone else there. We know that's not happening. No? So the point is, so much tolerance. They are tolerating us so much, so we should find some impetus for tolerating ourselves, no? And again, tolerating with hope, not like complaining, not like this is too much, but tate nukampam susamikshamano, this famous verse from the Bhagavatam. What, tolerating, trusting in Krishna's mercy, and even thinking, if I wouldn't be practicing bhakti, whatever is coming will be much worse.
Yes.
But I have bhakti in my life, so I can deal with this in a very different way. So actually Krishna is so merciful that I should be receiving this situation because of my past misdeeds, but actually Krishna is so merciful that he's sending me this.
Awesome.
Although still I feel it like this, I should know it's just a very specific, and he's sending it in such a way that I can get closer to him, I get detached from certain thing, whatever I need in that particular moment. No? Krishna says in the Bhagavatam, yasya haram anugrinami tad dhanai, what is tad dhanai Svasana, I forgot one word. But he's basically saying, to those who I want to be merciful with, I gradually deprive them from all the wealth. And the idea of wealth here doesn't mean necessarily money. But means those things we consider they are valuable and we are attached to. Someone may think that's money, someone may think that's fame, someone may think that's the car. And Krishna will, he says, Shanai is Shanai. He says, gradually doing that. So also he's saying, I'm not such a beast that take everything and the person goes neurotic and leaves me. I will do it in a way that they can sustain. I will pinch them with love, but also take that in a level that they can, it may sound too much, but it's not actually too much. It's not impossible to pass the test, as I like to put it. On this extreme we have easy, on this extreme we have impossible, in the mid path is difficult. Midpoint is not easy. Easy is extreme. Impossible is another extreme. We don't want either of those. If something is impossible, we'd get discouraged. Oh, I never passed the test, I cannot do it, this is not for me. If it's too easy, we get bored. But if it's difficult, that's the just right level of challenge that I need to change and to go out of my comfort zone, being lovingly pinched. So Krishna knows the dose that we can survive through. So we have that implicit trust. He knows actually better than me what do I need. I don't have that clear, but he knows. So I have to develop that unconditional, implicit faith. And again, it's not easy. I'm not saying easy. I'm not using the word easy. But that's not impossible either. Even though it sounds impossible sometimes. Oh, it's impossible. No, it's difficult. It's impossible if you don't surrender to Krishna a little bit more. And that's why Krishna is sending you that situation. So you realize, I cannot handle this myself. So try to surrender a little bit more than before. And then it becomes possible.
So we have to see the thunderbolts as destroying our prison.
So we had to see what?
See the thunderbolts that are coming as destroying our prison rather than hurting
prison.
Our entanglement. That is destroying that structure that's...
Yeah. I mean, sometimes the gurus describe us, no? Like, harder than a thunderbolt and softer like the lotus or something.
The rose.
So the idea is there. Okay, there can be a thunderbolt, but the rose is there also, no? And rose implies affectionate, tender person, good, well-wishing. So even if it takes the form of a thunderbolt, and I think like, my gosh, it's killing me. But if you remember, but this is a person who loves me the most, so that puts everything in a whole different context. And the person who loves me the most sometimes will speak hard to us because they love us. And because they see all that we can be and we are not doing that, or because they see that we are walking to some cliff and they have to stop that, and they will just like, and we feel, why do you speak like this? And the person will say, because I love you. Yeah, that was out of love. No, she was not a dysfunctional mother that wanted to tie her son to a... No, so... Of course, the person has to be really our well-wisher. We shouldn't, like, tolerate thunderbolts that are not coming from the heart. That's a separate thing. And sometimes we may have done that and it's dysfunctional.
Yeah.
But when we...
That's why we have Arjuna City.
Yeah.
Know which one is which.
Yeah. The thunderbolt discerner. So...
Yeah. Confusing.
But when it's coming from a place of real affection, trust, I mean, it doesn't matter if it's a thunderbolt or a rose petal.
Yeah.
Now, Srila Prabhupada will say, if the guru is caressing the disciple or slapping him, in both cases he's giving his mercy.
Yeah.
We shouldn't create a difference in our mind. I like the caress. I like the rose petal, not the thunderbolt. But sometimes you need the thunderbolt. You don't get the lesson with the rose petal. So,
I don't get it. If I get hit with a thunderbolt, then I might wake up.
I mean, you're not the only one who needs that treatment. Welcome to the club.
But it's so true. I'm talking to so many people, I'm sure you're also, that I could have never understood that I could be here today, and it's only because all of those difficulties, some thunderbolts, came into my life. Because we don't ask for them. We don't want them.
But we need them.
We need them. Yeah, either way, they're not.
Do not speak very loudly because the roof may open.
Do you think that's true?
What?
What, we were just talking that the roof might open, somebody's going to hear me if you start talking like that.
I mean, maybe not literally, but...
Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
Experience. Tell it.
Yeah, yeah.
It was in Costa Rica.
Okay.
And, you know...
There are some powerful thunderbolts there.
Well, the scorpions. I hadn't even seen a scorpion.
Oh.
And somehow in my mind, it was the next to last night there.
Hmm.
And I said, okay, Krishna, bring it on.
Oh, you said that? Oh, Subhaji.
And I lifted up my sheet that night before I got in the bed, and there he was.
And the relation is reciprocal, so.
And then there was a huge spider an hour later. Then the next night, there was another scorpion. I'm like, oh my God.
Shout out, girl.
So yeah, we should also be, I mean, I don't want to say with this, be careful what you ask to Krishna, but sometimes we may, yeah, be careful in the sense of, not because Krishna is bad, but just you may be asking something you are not able to deal with yet, and without good intent, with good intention, with being naive, you may say, like, I remember my first Janmashtami, I mean, total naive. No, first days with the devotee, we just want to control your senses in a weekend. So the devotee told me, okay, in this Janmashtami, we are fasting until midnight, and that was the first thing they told me. but this is a good day to pray to the deity and beg, ask for some blessing or something. So I went to the deity of Mahaprabhu with all my kanishta naivete, if you will, and I asked, okay, Mahaprabhu, I want to control my senses fully. Now, my idea was like, okay, I will make this prayer and it will happen. And it happened. I mean, the prayer was replied. It happened not in the form of controlling my senses, but of realizing how little control of my senses I have. And that happened when? At midnight, when there was 108 preparations. And I prayed some hours ago, I want to control my senses after, I mean, and I even forgot about what I prayed some hours ago, you know, after eating, and they were like, oh, but I prayed to control my senses. And so my point was, Krishna replied in the form of sending a situation to put me, to see how much do I actually want that or can.
Yeah.
And then I realized, yeah, this is not a joke. So when I pray, and I have to be realistic in what I'm asking, because we have so many prayers for great devotees, but how much you can, like, repeat those prayers and make them your own. I mean, if you are not there, that may be even dysfunctional or evasive.
Yeah. And you mentioned that when you were talking about disciple finding a guru, what kind of a disciple are you? Are you ready for that? So are you ready for these prayers, really? And it seems like, I know that, you know, very rarely, as much as you'd like to just do that, but when it actually hits you, when you actually have to go through that difficulty, it's like, oh boy, what was I thinking? Really, what was I thinking? I'm so not at that level. Because when it comes, it just...
But it's important, no? Even if the whole situation helped to show where I'm at present, that's important, to have a clearer...
Yeah.
I had an idea of that, and now I'm having a more clear vision where I'm actually at.
Well, that's
so.
The first 5 minutes, but then, the, you know, the rest of the time, and you actually have to go through it. Particularly if it's a really deep relationship breakup or a health issue, or, you know, a financial destruction, you know, after living in a certain way, it's, you know, it's like an earthquake.
Oh, yeah.
It shakes up everything. And you're just standing there, you know. I oftentimes think, wow, these people that are refugees and everything is taken away from them, and they're just standing there in the mud with their kids. Just like, I can't imagine me even being anywhere near that. I mean, maybe if I was there, I could scoop out Petri or something.
Yeah, but at the end of the day, whatever I am going through, or each of us, that's for a very unique reason why I'm going through that particular situation and not a refugee there or a multimillionaire there, and I'm in this unique, specific. I always remember Viktor Frankl in The Man's Search of Meaning, in the Holocaust camp. And the only way he could survive the horror was to find purpose in that experience. That, okay, for some particular reason that I don't know yet, God wants me to be in this unique experience myself, not any other, but myself. And I have find purpose in going through that, embracing my, whatever is unfolding in front of me. And eventually, of course, so much came from that. But we have to have this like unconditional, he will say reality has some unconditional purpose. Mm-hmm. We have to have this trust. Reality possesses unconditional meaning and purpose. We have to trust that when you lose faith in that, they are over.
And looking at all this, they're trying to find some humanity in it.
Mm-hmm.
And said, I at least know that I couldn't do what they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
And that was, okay.
Mm-hmm.
We went from that point.
You have to begin somewhere.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So thank you so much. There is light at the end of the tunnel. Sadhguru, please. Thank you so much for your time and company and questions and topics, and we will continue sharing more informally now with some prasad and Ekadasi prasad. Srila Gurudev ki jai, Sriman Mahaprabhu ki jai, Sri Hari Nam Sankirtan ki jai, Sri Sri Radha Gopinath ji ki jai, Sri Sri Krishna Balaram ki jai, Gaur Bhakta Vrinda ki jai, Gaur Premananda Hari.